Good evening. I call to order the Shoreline City Council regular meeting for Monday, October 6, 2025. Will you please join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mayor Roberts.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Mark.
Present.
Councilmember Ramsdale.
Present.
Councilmember Scully.
Present.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Present.
Councilmember Poby.
Here.
Councilmember Robertson.
Here.
Thank you. The next item is approval of tonight's agenda. If there are no objections or comments, the agenda is adopted by unanimous consent. Next on the report agenda is the report of the city manager, Mr. Ellington.
Good evening, Council. I want to start today's meeting by sharing that the 7th annual Shoreline Music Summit is this Saturday, October 11th. This is an all-day event taking place at multiple locations throughout the city. The summit starts off at Shoreline Community College from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., featuring panel discussions, artist talks, and networking opportunities. Starting around 6:30 p.m., you can find additional summit music performances at the Shoreline Community College Theater, London Bridge Studio, and Daryl's Tavern. Learn more and RSVP at sonicguild.org/shoreline. We still have a couple of roundabout simulator drop-in sessions scheduled over the coming months. If you missed a session this evening, actually I think that did not occur because there was a technical difficulty, but don't worry. The next drop-in session is Wednesday, October 15th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. here at City Hall. A full list of upcoming drop-in sessions, please visit shorelinewa.gov/roundabouts. There are still 3 Saturdays left to visit the Shoreline Farmers Market before their season ends on the 25th. Visit the market for fresh pastries, seasonal fruits and veggies, flowers, and more. The market is held at Shoreline Park and Ride from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We have one upcoming Shoreline Walks event this weekend. Join us Saturday, October 11th at 10 a.m. for the Parkwood Elementary School to Apartment Land and the South Station Walk. Learn more about Shoreline Walks and see other upcoming events at shorelinewa.gov/shorelinewalks. And finally, I have just a couple of public reminders to share. The Planning Commission will meet on Thursday, October 16th in the Council Chamber at 7 p.m. The next Council meeting will be on Monday, October 13th at 7 p.m. The Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services Tree Board's next meeting is this Thursday, October 23rd at 7 p.m. And for more information about these upcoming meetings, please visit shorelinewa.gov/calendar. And then I'd like to transition it over to Tricia Yonke to discuss the accredited agency APWA.
Good evening. I'm excited and proud to share that tonight we have Tina Nelson, the APWA Region 9 Director, here to present our recent reaccreditation from the American Public Works Association. So Region 9 is a very large region that Tina supports. It covers chapters in Alaska, Alberta, British Columbia, Colorado, Oregon, Saskatchewan, Utah, and Washington. But she is, however, a member of the Washington chapter here. And we really appreciate her being here this evening. So the city first achieved accreditation in 2017, so this is our second reaccreditation. And while the accreditation is awarded through the American Public Works Association, it really does reflect the city's broader commitment to best practices and continuous improvement. It really demonstrates how we live our strategic priority of being a high-performance organization and our city value of learning. So through this process, we've shown that our policies and procedures meet or exceed industry standard best practices. And this is something that requires coordination and collaboration across the entire city. Many of the standards involve not just public works, but also human resources, information technology, and finance, to name a few. So this really is a collaborative effort. And so joining me tonight, in addition to Tina, is our accreditation team. Sorry, Tina, I keep making you think. Liz Kelly, Lance Newkirk, and Colin Sachs. As I mentioned, there are many more throughout Public Works and the city involved, but this was our primary accreditation team that reviewed practices and provided feedback. And I especially want to acknowledge and thank Colin Sachs, who served as our accreditation manager, which really is a critical role at keeping us organized, on track, and ensuring all the documentation was ready for review and that met APWA standards and expectations. So at this point, I will turn it over to Tina, who will share more about reaccreditation and what this accomplishment means. And following her presentation, we'd like to take a quick photo with the mayor, Tina, and our accreditation team. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Tricia, for that great introduction. It's pretty clear that you know all about the accreditation. So good evening, Mayor and Council and City staff. I'm Tina Nelson with the Public Works Association, just like Tricia was mentioning. And I really appreciate this invitation, and it's a pleasure to have this opportunity to say a few words. Public Works is really my passion, and representing APWA is a true honor. And one of the privileges of serving on the APWA board is to get connect with others in the Public Works profession and APWA. And that includes events like this, where you get a chance to recognize exemplary work. So just a little quick thing, what is APWA for those of you that may not know? APWA, the American Public Works Association, was formed in 1937. It's a not-for-profit international organization with more than 32,000 members involved in the field of public works, governed by 17 board members. APWA serves its members by promoting professional excellence and public awareness through education, advocacy, and exchange of knowledge. APWA is headquartered in Kansas City, Missouri, has an office in Washington, D.C., and 62 chapters and 97 branches throughout North America. And one of the largest chapters is here in Washington, like Tricia was just mentioning, and I think 16 of those 1,500 members are here with the City of Shoreline's Public Works Department. I myself have been in the public works profession for 35 years. Serving the public well has always been one of my big goals. Public works has many responsibilities, as you all know, and the ability to serve well comes with a well-organized approach. Accreditation and staying accredited are steps in that direction. It sure takes an effort to get there, and I know what it takes. I recently retired from an agency that was accredited, so I do know what it takes and how much work it is to actually get there. Accreditation is a mark of professionalism, indicating a public works agency has made the commitment to continuous improvement, and I think you heard Tricia say that as well, in the delivery of public works operations and services in the community it serves. Accreditation recognizes an agency's policies, procedures, and practices, and they have been evaluated against nationally recognized management practices to be determined to be appropriate for the particular agency. Now, this is a reaccreditation, and reaccreditation is evident that your public works team continues to put in the work to be a high-performing agency. During the evaluation of the City of Shoreline, 101 practices were re-reviewed by a team of professionals from Missouri and Virginia. And it is my pleasure and my honor to tell you that you received full accreditation. There are about 200 agencies across the United States and Canada that have received accreditation. And in the state of Washington, you're not the only city, but you're one of six. Bainbridge Island, Bellevue, Lake Stevens, Bothell, and Tacoma are some of the other cities. Receiving APWA recognition for engaging in best practices across the board is one of the highest distinctions in the industry. It further reinforces the theme for Public Works this year, which is people, purpose, and presence. Lastly, I really want to thank you, City Council and Mayor, for supporting your department in this work and to recognize your staff for setting a great example in the service that those that live and work here in the City of Shoreline can count on. And I would like to present the plaque to Tricia, and recognize her achievement, but also more so the real workhorse behind putting it all together and making it happen, Colin Sachs.
And on behalf of the entire City Council, if you didn't hear the clapping from the dais, congratulations to Colin, Tricia, and the entire Public Works team. Next on the agenda is council reports. Are there any council reports this evening? Councilmember Robertson.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two reports. Last week was a week without driving. And I think we were all invited to participate, and I did not. But I did meet with some folks who were involved with the Week Without Driving, and I'll be really honest, thinking about it just terrified me. There is no way that I could get through a week and do the things that I need to do on my feet, on two wheels, or by using public transit. And I think that was part of the point, is to understand the realities of what it's like to get around without your car and the challenges there. So while it will never be fully just easy to do all of those things, I think it was important to have conversations, to hear about what that experience is like, and to think as we are faced with policy decisions in the future about how we can make it easier to be without a car and to utilize all these other modes of transportation in our community. So I just want to thank the folks who pulled me aside and shared their stories and various experiences and various reasons behind their choices or inability to utilize cars. So thank you very much for that. And the other update I have is just about the Shoreline FIFA World Cup committee that met late last week, and continue to be very excited about that event coming to our region next summer. The next big event is on Friday, December 5th, which is the final draw for groups, and we'll get our schedule. We'll know exactly which teams are coming here, which days they're playing. It's a big deal. So we are looking at how we can create an event, maybe a watch party somewhere in our city, to experience that celebration together, and then immediately start, you know, chewing on, okay, this is who's coming. How can we really embrace that? So more to come, but I wanted to just let you know that those conversations are still happening. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Adamasu.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have two reports. I participated in the Affordable Housing Committee meeting. Also, I took a class on rehydrating our world. Some suggestions they had for communities and cities is to promote more sponge cities. Work with the Army Corps of Engineers, who has money to do work on projects. Make curb cutting to rain gardens legal. The city of Tucson did this. And they noted their research showed community projects have more effects than large, expensive projects. We are fortunate to have a water cycle expert at University of Washington, Abigail Swan, who researches how plants, trees affect the atmospheric rivers and ecoclimate teleconnections. The most promising takeaway from the class is the projections that show if actions focus on restoring the water cycle, we can have planet healing in 15 to 20 years. The current projections for actions on greenhouse gases show 50 years for planet healing. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you. I too have two reports, but that was such a great segue into the regional water quality meeting. They are concerned that WTD, our King County Wastewater Treatment Division, is in the process of developing a plan, and they're concerned about the process of how this plan will work. And the example they provided was the example of the combined sewer overflow projects that are scheduled to cost $3 to $6 billion at this juncture. And we, as a group, Sound Cities Association, as well as the wastewater districts, are very, very concerned about the amount of money that that's gonna cost relative to the other costs for running the city. And so we talked about how 90% of the water that goes into the Sound is stormwater and 10% is wastewater, and we're looking for a political solution that might help control costs and help the environment with the on the stormwater side as a potential. So that was one. Second was I attended the King County Climate Collaboration Committee, where we spent most of our time talking about an in-person event that will happen at the end of October, as well as talking about EV charging. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where members of the public may address the City Council on agenda items or other matters pertaining to city business for 3 minutes or less, depending on the number of people wishing to speak. How many people are signed up today?
There are three.
Okay. So everyone will have 3 minutes. If the clerks can read your name, if you could line up behind the podium.
Lathan Wayne, Ruth Kagey, and Steve Woodward. Woodard.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Mayor. The reason why I'm here tonight, your Parks Board and all your other committees, I think it's a good idea to have someone with a disability on those committees, because we're a part of the city, and I think it's a good idea for someone with a disability to serve on these committees and work with you guys. And we're like everybody else. So I think it's a good idea to put this in consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. And Lathan, I think if you look at and talk to the members of our Parks Board and our Planning Commission, I think you will be pleasantly impressed with the individuals who are serving on that commission.
No, I'm talking about other people nominating. You know what I mean. Thank you.
Representative, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. It's a delight to speak with you this evening. I think most of you are aware I represented the city of Shoreline and the 32nd district for 20 years in the legislature. And during that time, I was frequently impressed with the lack of available services for both North King and South Snohomish County, and was confronted many times with an inability to get funding for providers who are struggling to meet the needs, and to try to assure that these communities, the members of these communities, have the services that they were asking for. We have an opportunity in Linwood to provide a wide array of services through the new Linwood Neighborhood Center. And I know your staff has written a very good summary that's in your packet, and you'll be discussing it later. But it's really been a privilege to work with this group. I co-chair the steering committee, and it is really such a combination of services that are badly needed in both South Snohomish and North King. The Center for Human Services, which I'm sure you're all well aware of, provides services in Shoreline in several locations, and they will be a major tenant in the LNC. But we also will have a variety of refugee services for Latinx and for Korean and other refugee services, which I think probably many members of the Shoreline community would be able to access. And we also will have four ECAP classrooms. And it's a childcare desert in South Snohomish, and I think there's a lack of resources as well in North King and in Shoreline. So it's very accessible by Shoreline residents. The transit system, it's right at 196 and Aurora. So I think it would be easy for Shoreline residents to get to those services. It also will provide a real gathering place for community. There's going to be a community cafe and a large meeting space, and I think it would be a good investment for the city of Shoreline. I know it's unusual to invest in a facility outside your boundaries, but I think your population would benefit from what will be available from the Linwood Neighborhood Center. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. First, let me just say how amazing it is to visit other council. This is brilliant to have the countdown. I like that. I'm going to bring that back to my council. Steve Woodard, I am out of Mount Lake Terrace, as I just said, and really I'm here for several reasons. One, just to say thank you for entertaining this conversation this evening. My understanding is you'll have a study session at minimum and maybe even take that to the next level. So thank you for that. Also want to say thank you for those of you who were able to already tour the facility. We want to make sure you know that we will be offering more tours so you can see it firsthand, because this is truly one of those buildings that you have to be next to it to truly appreciate what it represents. That said, I'm going to speak on two different folds, if you will, one as a council member and then one just personally. Coming to you as a council member, I want to let you know Mount Lake Terrace is one of those cities that was just mentioned that actually recognize this is not a time to be stopping at borders only. The need does not stop at our borders. No one comes up and says, oh, I've hit the King County Snohomish line, let me turn back around or head forward, whichever one that is, and that same goes for the cities. Which is my way of saying Mount Lake Terrace is 4 square miles. And what we learned during our COVID years is, of course, that we are better together. We knew that before, but this really drove that point home. But it also really exposed what your limitations are, which is the three reasons that I would say we really jumped on board as a city. First and foremost, around behavioral health. As you were just hearing, the Center for Human Behavioral Health will be in there, and that's such a huge footprint. We also hope to have medical facilities in there. All that's in your packet, and you'll see that. Instead, it was more about just having access. Mount Lake Terrace was not going to be able to provide that the way we wanted to, and this was a chance to attach our relationship and grow it together around resources that are going to serve our most vulnerable population. Transportation, of course, was that next concern. If you're going to invest outside of your borders, how's that going to work? Well, we invested before light rail was a real thing to us, right? And so I want to acknowledge with your two beautiful light rail stations, your pending beautiful Tiger Grant funded bridge across the divide, if you will, that's going to open that up even more. All of our transit, as we know, is now routing towards these epic centers, if you will, these transit posts, which is to say your residents, if they can get to any public transportation, they get right to the light rail. It's, what, 2 to 3 stops up and right across the way, as that 196-99 is a true crossroad. That last part is just to make sure that as you're reading through your packet, recognize this building is designed to adjust over time. So the resources that you see in there now, the partners that you see in there now, that will adjust over time. We wanted to make sure we were a part of that discussion and a part of that need as they're looking at that and growing it over time. The last one really is this, very personally speaking. I switched careers because of this building. I've been pretty public about that. I was a college advisor, an administrator, and this was an opportunity to truly bring transformation to our cities. And it's truly an epitome of collaboration between public, private, and the government. You'll see that in your packet. So thank you all. I hope that, just like Mount Lake Terrace, you give this some very serious consideration. And at the end, if you decide to move forward with it, even better. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. Does anyone else in the audience wish to address the council at this time? Seeing none, we're going to close public comment. The next item is approval of the consent calendar. Is there a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
The consent calendar has been moved and seconded. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Deputy Mayor Mork?
Aye.
Councilmember Automasu?
Aye.
Councilmember Ramsdale?
Aye.
Councilmember Robertson?
Aye.
Councilmember Poby?
Aye.
Councilmember Scully?
Aye.
Mayor Roberts?
Aye. That motion passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is a public hearing and discussion on the 2026 Community Development Block Grant Program and the reprogramming of prior year's funding. And there is a staff report tonight. The agenda for the public hearing is going to be a staff presentation followed by public testimony and then council discussion. Welcome.
Thank you. Okay, it worked as I planned. Well, thank you. My name is Bethany Walbrook Dunn, and I'm the city's community services manager. And I'm here today to share with you information on the recommended projects to be funded with community development block grant funding through in 2026. And in a little bit of a different take, we're actually asking council to consider reprogramming some prior year funds as well. You will know that we come here every fall for this public hearing and discussion. And this year, again, we're adding some reprogrammed funds as part of the process. So as a reminder for council and for the public, in order to use community development block grant dollars here in Shoreline, it is required that we hold a public hearing and that council take formal action on this, both for every year for the funding plan, as well as any time that we reprogram funds. We estimate there to be $320,000 available for programming in 2026 from 2026 federal dollars and $50,909 from 2025 unprogrammed funds. The use of these funds is guided by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development requirements, and that pertains to how much of the funding can be used for certain purposes, and that a majority of the funds need to be used for folks that and households that are low and moderate income. And just to give everyone an idea, for a family of four in King County, to be 80% or below means they can earn up to $121,800. We are also bound by the interlocal agreement that we have with King County. They act as our go-between with HUD, and so they do have some programmatic requirements that allows, again, them to access some of our administration dollars. And then the council gets to make, based on staff recommendations, local decisions on capital funding. So the list in front of us, or on the screen rather, is what our recommendations are for the 2026 use of CDBG funding. And again, this is simply the $320,000 that we estimate to be used or to be available in 2026. And you'll see, so there's at the top list is the programs that are considered our regional programs that we that based upon our ILA that we have with King County, these funds are set aside for this purpose. So the first one is the Major Home Repair Program of $80,000. That's 25% of our funding. Housing Stability Program, which is 5% for about $16,000. That program is rent and mortgage assistance. And then King County Planning and Administration to do all the reports to HUD, and the consolidated plan writing and administration of our capital projects, they receive 12%, so the 38.4. And then in terms of local programs, we're recommending Minor Home Repair, a program of Sound Generations, for $130,000. An affordable housing acquisition project through Vital Housing for $23,600. And City of Shoreline, the cost for planning administration that goes to our personnel. And then this slide talks about the reprogramming of the leftover, the contingency funds that were left unprogrammed in 2025. Of that, we have $50,909. We have had this year for the Minor Home Repair Program really an explosion of need and of services provided. And so we are requesting that we be able to add $40,000 to our 2025 contract. That would bring that contract to a total of $152,000. If this isn't granted, basically they'll have to have folks be on a waiting list until 2026. And then the second project that we're asking to use some reprogram fund is to add to that 2026 project, the affordable housing, and I'll talk a little bit about each of these projects in the next slides. So that would bring that total for affordable housing to $34,509. So a little bit more about the Minor Home Repair Program. Again, this is a program that is managed out of Sound Generations. And these are, when we talk about minor home repairs, there are things that are anywhere from a new hot water heater, a toilet repair, a dripping sink, all of the things that can help someone stay safely in their home. And as so far, or as in 2024, there were 240 minor home repairs completed for 43 Shoreline households. And already as of July of this year, we have seen 206 minor home repairs and 49 Shoreline households served. So, you know, through 7 months of the year, we are almost at where we were all of last year. So hence the request for additional funds. And then in terms of this affordable housing acquisition, this is an interesting project that was brought to us. It's with a developer called Vital Housing, and what they do is they seek out properties that are aging out of their tax credit program, so that this properties that are deed protected or deed restricted on keeping a project affordable housing may go back to market rate. So they have purchased properties in Oregon and most recently in Olympia in order to maintain properties at affordable housing. Now this project, they're looking at purchasing two properties of approximately 110 units. These properties are not currently technically affordable housing. They're more of the naturally affordable, basically, you know, the 30 to 35 year old buildings that are just, again, based on how, you know, the age of the building. They're just a little bit more affordable than the brand new buildings that we see around our station areas. So if this project has the CDBG funds in, they will be deed restricted affordable to 60% AMI. They will not require anyone to move out, and they will be remodeling, doing some remodeling of the units as people cycle out of the building, so no one will be displaced as part of this purchase. And what this small amount of our local CDBG funds is, it allows the nonprofit owner to access a tax exemption through RCW 8436560. So small amount of local funds, but it would be 110 units on two separate properties at 60% AMI for households. So the next steps would be to conduct the required public hearing and discuss the recommendation for the 2026 CDBG funding plan and the reprogramming of prior year's CDBG funds as recommended, and then provide direction for action to come back on October 27th. And with that.
Thank you. As I said earlier, the agenda for the public hearing is a staff presentation, which brings us to public testimony and then council discussion. I now wish to open the public hearing. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per person testifying. Has anyone signed up to speak for this public hearing?
No.
So if now is your time, if you'd like to come to the podium and address the council, please come to the podium. And if anyone is online, please use the raise your hand function in Zoom or dial *9 from a phone. I see no one in person running to the podium. And is anyone online?
No.
Okay. I will now close the public hearing and we'll go to council discussion. Any council discussions? Councilmember Ramseau.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for the presentation. I mean, clearly the minor home repair and the major home repair program are very needed programs in our community. I absolutely respect them. Actually, as a case manager, when I worked for the Seattle Aging and Disability Services, doing outreach work in Seattle Housing Authority buildings, and then again when I was a crisis worker for Evergreen Hospital, I saw how the minor and major home repair programs were very, very successful mm-hmm. in helping people, some elderly people especially, basically age in place. Mm-hmm. However, I also had a lot of experience working with folks who were in emergency situations, mm-hmm. who needed help with utility assistance. I mean, and for a lot of these low-income homes, if folks haven't, if they're not current with their utility payments, then that is a reason for eviction. And so in my career, I would say, like, for every 20 people, I was able to help avoid being evicted from mm-hmm. a low-income apartment or a home. That maybe, like, if there was one person who, for every 20 people that I was helped to avoid being eviction for utility assistance, to be like one that would be benefit from that minor home repair program. So my concern is that I would like to see that the unused funds from last year being used for more of an emergent need for folks who just. I think there's more a need in our community for folks who are in threat of being evicted, who are don't own a home, but are, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck in their apartment, and who are having a difficult time, especially elderly people, to be able to keep up with their utility payments. We do know from reports I've heard from Lake City Partners, from North Urban Human Services Alliance, that the fastest growing segment of our population that is becoming homeless are older adults who are on fixed income, who cannot keep up with the cost of living. So I appreciate the direction that staff is asking the council to go in with that funds, but I'm a little disappointed that more money isn't being spent for more emergent purposes. And if possible, I would like to see more funds going towards more emergency purposes rather than something to help people. I mean, I definitely don't want to, like, cut the minor home and major home repair program. I think those are great, but I think that I'd like to see more money diverted in our budget for more emergent help with folks who are struggling. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Adamasu.
I have two questions, and one of them was the same issue. So I was kind of shocked to see 16,000 as the number for, and I know that's added on to.
Yeah, so yeah. That is, again, within our ILA, that's the 5% that goes mm-hmm. towards that program. And that's a program that's funded as a, like I said, a larger program through the Y. We do have, from our human services plan, the overall that uses city general funds, as well as there's some state 1406 housing dollars that we use for rent assistance. That totals $176,000 and change each year.
Is that rent and mortgage?
Yeah, it's rent, mortgage, utilities. That includes, just of that $176,000, $25,000 is just utilities assistance. That has been the council at the time when we added a utility tax, added that into the human services funding at $25,000, and that's probably 10 or 15 years ago that was added as a flat $25,000. The Hope Link, where all of those funds go, like I said, it's a mix of, there's $86,000 that can only be used for rent and mortgage assistance. There's the $25,000 that can only be used for utilities, and that's a wide variety of utilities. And then the remainder, which I believe, I can't do the math off the top of my head, I think it's $65,000, that can be used for rent, it can be used for a car repair, it can be used for a wide variety of things. I would definitely agree that emergency financial assistance is definitely needed. So
yes,
and it's pieces of things. We also fund Shoreline Caring, and they do smaller amounts of, I think, $400 for folks that need a much quicker, and they're a little bit more nimble with how quickly they can help someone out. So we also have those funds as well.
Okay, so yeah, I'm just urging you to maybe shift the funds a little bit more towards preventing evictions and preventing people from losing their mortgage. So my second question is, on one of the slides with vital housing, mm-hmm. You said the people that would qualify would be 60% AMI.
Correct.
So what is that amount?
Oh, that's a great question. I have that written down and okay. I didn't mention it. So for example, a household of two, the limit would be $74,250. And then a family of four, that's $92,750. And that is adjusted yearly.
So I'm wondering, can we go lower than 60% AMI? Can we go 50 or 40% AMI?
Great question. That is not what they requested. So we would have to go back to them. I think I will say two things. We will find folks that will make much less than this.
Yes.
And will be paying greater than the 30%.
Exactly. They'll be paying what someone making $92,000 would be paying.
Right. But we also find if we start to get to 50 to 30, it can be a little bit more, talking a little bit more about to 30%, like permanent supportive housing, folks that make that income on a ongoing basis.
I'm thinking more like a cashier
at
a store that lives in Shoreline.
We could go back and see if a lower would meet, but it may not meet their performance that they have to be able to make the sale work.
Okay. Yeah. Just, you know, with the high AMI right now in King County, it's bringing all the affordable mm-hmm. prices sky high.
Yeah.
So people that work here in lower income jobs, not permanent supportive housing mm-hmm. type mm-hmm. persons, but they should have somewhere to live that's affordable too. So squeak it down from 60% AMI maybe.
I agree completely. I think the challenge with this is that there's no other
group is
it's private financing other than that. So there's no tax credits, there's no other HUD funding, there's no any other something to help them bring the cost down. And so what is bringing the cost down for them in this performa for their to make sure that this can work is the tax exemption, which they get by accessing very minimal city dollars.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Councilmember Robertson.
Thanks. Thank you, Mayor. Every year when this comes up, I always read it and think this is a really thoughtful, well laid out proposal, and I'm in full support. And I am. And there's some great questions that are brought up. And of course, we want to minimize evictions. I think you answered one of my follow-up questions, which was going to be what other resources are available for utility assistance in an emergency fashion. I don't know if you have anything more to add. I think you already answered that.
Yeah.
So, and same with this vital housing. I'm delighted that there is an organization that is willing to come in and swoop up some housing and stabilize it. These CDBG dollars, did I say that right? Yeah. They're not going to solve every problem that we have. There's more need than this pool of money will allow us to solve. And I know Councilmember Scully has brought up many times that, you know, maybe we're just not putting enough money overall as a city into these types of services. So hopefully I didn't misquote you there. So I would be interested in looking to see where we could add and make a meaningful difference with our city dollars as we're approaching the budget cycle to impact some of these categories, because it's not all going to happen. We're not all going to solve it with mm-hmm. CDBG funds. So thank you for the work that you did, and wherever we end up, I know we'll be making a difference in Shoreline.
Thank you. Councilmember Scully.
Thank you, and you didn't misquote me, you just said it better. So thank you. My first question is,
how did we end up in this with this 50,909 carryover?
Yeah, so that was unprogrammed from last year because we had no other projects.
We just chose not to allocate it.
Correct, yep.
Is there anything that prevents us in any of the agreements you've discussed and the legal requirements from allocating the entirety of that money to the housing stability?
There is. So CDBG regulations state that there is a cap of 15% for use.
Thank you. Let me ask a different question.
Oh,
how
sorry.
Much can we put in?
That's a great question. Yeah. So it would be 10%.
10%.
10%.
The maximum we can put in is 5,900.
Sorry, let me restate that carefully. It'd be 10% of our 2026 allocation to use it in 2026. I know that's we would use 30,000, 32,000, 10% of what we get next year. Mm-hmm.
So I, repeating myself now as council member, you know, these are such tiny amounts. And when we talk about transportation, we talk about hundreds of millions. When we talk about parks, we talk about tens of millions. Here we're talking about tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. This isn't our only source, but yeah, I mean, we need to overall increase funding, and I hate to micromanage, but given how little money it is, it seems to me that Councilmember Ramsdell has made an accurate point that we ought to put it where it has the most impact. And I'm pretty convinced that we ought to max out on this housing stability before we look to the other ones. So I think you've got two of us on that, and I would appreciate it if staff could create that as an option for the action item.
If I may, to add it to housing stability, if you feel strongly to do it to a rent assistance, I would actually not advocate for that. I would advocate for it at HopeLink or something else locally.
Sure.
That is a little bit more accessible for our residents, if that's what you so choose.
What I would like to do is move it from the home repair programs to the housing stability, the direct grants for mortgage and utility programs, and however staff believes that is appropriate, I defer.
Councilmember Ramsdell. Just for a point of clarification, so if it's going to HopeLink instead of the housing stability program, would that be more, would like utility assistance managed by HopeLink be more accessible to our residents than if it goes into the stability program?
I don't know if accessible is the right word. It's more as HopeLink is the known entity here in Shoreline that that people know, that we refer to, that everyone's very much aware of. And so I think it would be more targeted, I guess, is what I'm saying. Not that it wouldn't get used. If I was gonna fund a program, I probably wouldn't put additional funds into the housing stability directly, if that makes any sense. Because it is, what they do with that funding is it goes into a pot, and then city folks get reports that says how much of your money you got back here. And it doesn't always equal 16,000 or 11,000 or whatever our 5% is. So I can guarantee that if we put that funding into HopeLink in Shoreline, it will only be spent, you know, we will get our full meal deal dollar value out of that. Whereas if it goes into this, you know, the 5% goes into this housing stability pot, there are folks calling from all over the county. And again, they do their best to get the dollars to match, but it is that representative amount. It's not always completely equal to the 16,000 that we put in.
So the short version is goes to HopeLink, it serves Shoreline residents,
for
goes
sure.
to the housing stability
yeah.
program, it could serve Shoreline people outside of Shoreline.
It gets close to, you know, they target it much like they do with other types of funding, you know, back into the communities. They want to balance it out, but I would be guaranteed that it would go through HopeLink to Shoreline only residents for sure, the exact dollar amount.
So I would be in favor of that amount going to HopeLink. So that's okay. Hopefully nobody else would have that objection on the council, but I'd like to hear other members of the council's opinion about that.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you. Ms. Wolbert-Dunn, you picked my interest when you were talking about the $25,000 that a previous council set aside for utility payments. Mm-hmm. What would be involved with increasing that amount? Is that possible?
It's all up to budgetary limitations of our financial situation in Shoreline.
But we could choose to
do
that, and if we did, would that, are we feeling confident it would get for utility help to residents in Shoreline?
Yes, because again, those funds go to HopeLink.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm very concerned, colleagues, the utility rates are going up way over the amount of inflation, and the number of people who are going to be impacted is going to increase, and would just like to get that thought of. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Poby.
Thank you, Mayor. Quick, thank you for clarifying a little of the questions that came up. I'm just looking at the planning and admin allocations. Are those appropriations fixed?
They are fixed. They're fixed per both federal regulations and our interlocal agreement with King County. We could elect to take less in shoreline.
We chose to. Yeah, because I was just looking at the amount. That's about 70 grand between King County and shoreline. Yeah. So I was just wondering. Thank you.
Thank you for answering my colleague's questions. This question I was going to save for the next presentation, but I'll kind of ask it now, since we're in the sense that several years ago we did authorize, not just sort of moving several thousand dollars around, but we made a budget amendment for $100,000. We have the opportunity to do big things and to help people much more than sort of the limitations of the CDBG funds. Mm-hmm. So I'm asking the city manager, sort of when thinking about sort of mid-buy and where we are, what kind of surplus are we looking at in terms of sort of large dollar amounts that we have for additional projects or projects that the city manager is recommending? Can you give a sort of a preview of where your thinking is and where we are sort of number-wise to sort of help inform both this conversation and the subsequent conversation?
Well, whereas I'm not in a position to tell you an exact dollar amount, I could tell you that there is excess money, particularly one-time funding, that we have the ability to look at some of these requests that are coming tonight as well as next council meeting, as well as the discussion tonight. But I can't give you an exact dollar amount range that we could spend up to. But clearly we set aside appropriate amount of money for our rainy day fund, mm-hmm. For the amount that we want to keep ending fund balance that we don't want to touch. So there is an amount that we can, I won't say play with.
We will say that our, the city manager has, and our finance team has budgeted very conservatively, and there are excess funds that have not been spent, that were budgeted but have not been spent in this budget, in past budgets that. I'm with Councilmember Ramsdale in that I think making sure people stay in their homes is, I think, has been proven as the most, so among the most beneficial things we can do. I'm at the same time, I'm with Councilmember Robertson in terms of thinking about what the limitations of CDBG, especially for this year, and the unknown state of CDBG moving forward, that I don't really want to sort of upset staff recommendations right now. And I think we just need, but if we want to have a larger discussion about priorities and where we want, what we want to do, if we're going to make an impact, I think we go big or bigger than sort of a few thousand dollars trying to, if CDBG funds. And that's kind of where my thought is. And then while I recognize Councilmember Adamasu's desire for seeing if we can try to get things lower than 60% AMI. The state law says 60%. This is a small percentage of their funds. I don't think that we're going to. If there is a conversation to be had, I encourage staff to have that conversation. But I don't think we need to and should hold back in these funds to try to get something lower. One of the things with most of the state's AMI requirements is that AMI, when they talk about AMI and limits on AMI, it is not just for rent, but it also includes utilities. Mm-hmm. So even though as utilities are going up, as the deputy mayor has said, those funds are almost come first before rent in term, or the sort of payment of rent. So rent actually goes down. Yes, people are still paying that cost, but the rent is lower than sort of the sticker price in some cases. So that's my 2 cents. I look to others to see where they stand or if there's more conversation to be had.
So I don't know that we need to have more debate. However, I appreciate all of that, and I don't know how the vote's going to go, but I still would like to see an option on this and for it to be on action to convert more to what I'm calling housing stability, although I'm not particular about what program it goes to.
Any further discussion? Okay, and I believe this comes back to as part of the budget.
This comes, in theory, it's supposed to come back on consent on the 27th, but it sounds like maybe consent is not the best option, that we can come with some other options, a couple different scenarios to consider.
Okay.
We can do that by on the 27th?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, Councilmember Rademaster.
Just a point of clarification. Can your options include the Hope Link? Because I wasn't exactly sure how that all funded out.
Or, just to be clear, too, you're speaking of the 10% for public services, which would be the additional financial assistance. Is that?
No, we were talking housing stability emergency.
We're talking about the same thing. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Councilmember Ramsdale.
Sorry, it's another point of clarification. So there's the housing stability program, and then there's the other option is it going directly to HopeLink, right?
Correct. The housing stability is not going away. It has to, per our ILA,
right.
5% has to go to them, but we could use 10% of our 2026 in 2026 for what CDBG calls a public service, but we generally call it human services. So it could go to a rental assistance program or a utilities. It could be just generally financial assistance.
Okay, so it can go to HopeLink if we so decide.
Correct.
Okay, all right, thank
correct.
You.
Okay, I see no further discussion on this. Thank you very much. And the next item on the agenda is a discussion of providing one-time funding for Volunteers of America's Linwood Neighborhood Center. This item is sponsored by Deputy Mayor Mork and Councilmember Scully. And there is a staff report.
All right, I'm back. So discussion of the Volunteers of America Linwood Neighborhood Center. So just a brief history on the creation of the center. So as you've heard from some of our speakers today, there has been a sort of a vacuum of services in the South Snohomish County area. And this discussion started about 15 years ago from Trinity Lutheran Church, and one of their members, I'm sure everyone knows who Rick Steves is, they had some land on the backside of their property that had a building that was torn down, and they thought, what a great idea to use this as a resource for the community. So got some seed dollars, we have land, and those two groups looked for an entity to come lead the capital process and the management on the ongoing operations of the center. So that's where Volunteers of America stepped in and started, you know, working on the fundraising and what the building would look like, et cetera. So a little bit about the Linwood Neighborhood Center. So if you would just go straight up Aurora on Highway 99, and it's on the corner, the northwest corner of 196th Street and 99. I know some of you have toured it. It is a beautiful 40,000 square foot building that was really designed from the get-go as a dedicated social services center. So as mentioned, it does have flexibility. It's got great spaces for medical and dental and vision care. It's got gathering spaces for community use. And right now they're estimated to serve more than 24,000 persons yearly and scheduled to open in early 2026. So on the slide, you'll see a list of providers for that they estimate to be, you know, in during the opening period of the center. Services managed by Volunteers of America, the Boys and Girls Club of Snohomish County, Center for Human Services, Korean Community Service Center, Latino Educational Training Institute, Child's Drive, Cocoon House, and then they do have, like I said, space for medical, dental, vision services, but have not locked in a provider at this time. So speaking of access to the center from Shoreline, so it is from City Hall. It is about a little over 5 miles straight up 99. It is very accessible via public transit. You do have to transfer at by Costco, and it does take about 45 plus or minus minutes. There are a lot of the services that are provided there are available locally in Shoreline from the Center for Human Services and before and after school care, et cetera. Really, the service level is dependent on what the client is eligible to receive by a particular service provider. So as has been mentioned, they have these great providers in the building that will be paying a small amount of rent there, but each agency does will be defining who is eligible based likely on the funding that they have. So for example, in Shoreline, if someone calls HopeLink and asks for rental assistance and they live in Linwood, they would not be able to serve them because the funding comes from the city. And they would, at HopeLink, refer someone to other services that they know about in Snohomish County that provide that type of assistance. So it really does depend on the particular services when someone comes in and what funding, how flexible their funding is to be able to provide particular services. So in the corner of the slide, you see that is our kind of our triangle of services and of needs that we have identified as part of our human services strategic plan. And right in the middle there, one of our main priorities is to prioritize community equity and access. And so we do center a lot of our programs, a lot of our funding that we recommend to council for approval on programs that do have a physical location in Shoreline. I would imagine that, I know it's been mentioned a couple of cultural services that are available in that will be available at the Linwood Neighborhood Center, that I do imagine some of our residents would, you know, go the extra mile in to get those services there or to socialize. So it is, you know, within complete probability that there will be services for our residents that could be provided there. So we're right now they're focusing on strictly the capital funding. That's what the discussion and the request has been. I've laid out here a consolidated list from what it was in the staff report, but just wanted to point out in terms of the cities of Linwood, Mount Lake Terrace, and Edmonds, Linwood provided $1 million, Mount Lake Terrace $250,000, and the city of Edmonds $100,000. Here is a rendering of what it will look like. And I would have to say on our visit, it did have a lot of the bones on the outside and they're really working on the finishing of the inside of the center. And as was mentioned, they do have some community space, especially out front, and some play equipment on the outside as well. And then again for tonight is just to discuss the Lynnwood Neighborhood Center and consider providing Shoreline General funds to this capital project as part of the mid-by budget process.
Thank you. Is there a discussion? Councilor Sully.
Thank you. I ask, along with the Deputy Mayor, that this be placed on the agenda. I originally spoke with the city manager about potentially just providing funding for it, but there are state law restrictions and we have to do it through council. And I want to keep that fact in our minds as I'm talking about why I kind of want to do this. I've been aware of this project for a long time. For some reason, I was invited to a fundraising event at Rick Steve's house when it was just a sort of a kernel of an idea. And I've watched it progress very rapidly to fruition. And it's been impressive. The work that VOA, WW, and the other cities has done has been really impressive. We have a history here in Shoreline of partnering with other cities and other organizations, and I want to expand and continue that. And my favorite example of that is the RACER program, which we partner with 5 cities across the north of King County, and we have mental health, behavioral health providers who respond to emergencies. We've also partnered with those same 5 cities to get a crisis receiving center in Kirkland. It's a lot further to Kirkland than it is to Lynnwood. And there's sort of the artificial barrier there, which is the county line. And it's hard to move funding, and there are some real procedural obstacles. But when it comes to building a social safety net, I want to make sure that it's a circle around Shoreline and not just a line across the top of the county, because there are some shared services that it really makes more sense to partner with our cities to the north rather than the east. The services that we fund obviously has to benefit Shoreline or the Shoreline City Council. And what excites me about this project is exactly what Ms. Wohlberg-Dunn said. We've got Korean Community Service Center, Latino Educational Training Institute, as well as a bunch of other fairly specialized providers. A Korean Community Service Center is an absolute need, but I don't know that we need one in Shoreline, one in Lynnwood, small one in Woodway. You know, I mean, it's not something that we need to provide city by city. We can provide it regionally. So I'm excited about us participating in this because I think our citizens are going to use it whether we contribute or not. And I want us to be part of the team going forward because I can see a date in the near future when we expand upon the stuff that I'm proud to report to Representative Kagi we've done in the last few years to expand capacity. We now have the Oaks, we have St. Margaret's, we have other facilities, we've got RACER, but we still have huge holes. And as we identify a specialized hole, I want to be able to reach out to my colleagues in Mount Lake Terrace and say, hey, we could use your help on this one because Shoreline is going to be the regional provider for whatever specialized service. Lynnwood donated $1 million. That would be overkill because our folks are unlikely to be using the Boys and Girls Club much because there are other services in Shoreline which provide the same benefit. But I have asked that a range be presented to council as a suggestion between 50 and 100,000. Which I think, and I want staff's opinion on it too, probably tracks pretty closely to the benefits the city will receive. And more than that, I just wanted to open the conversation about making it a circle and about continuing to look to Snohomish County cities as well as King County ones as partners.
Thank you. Councilor Adamasu.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor and Councilmember Scully for bringing this to council. And thank you, Bethany, for your staff report. I did attend the tour and it was phenomenal. There are solar panels on the roof too. I was very impressed with that. I am supportive of this. I don't know where I would land on the 50 to 100,000, but I'm looking forward to this coming back in the mid-buy. And as we look at the different things we want to fund, this is definitely one of the things I want on the agenda. The question I have is, how close are you to getting the medical provider, and does that have anything to do with the Medicaid cuts?
That question I cannot answer for you because I don't think they know at this point, but I can find out definitely and get back to council within the next few days.
Okay, let's see. I think that's the only question I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Councilmember Scully, you are very articulate. I won't pretend to say what you just said, other than you are absolutely right. There's not a line at the county line. We need to think regionally. And I really appreciate that some of the programs that are there may be programs that many in Shoreline don't utilize, but there are programs there that are not duplicated here 100%. Am I correct on that, Ms. Warbuck-Dunn?
I think that's a fair statement, yes.
That there may be people who would very much like to do. Those of us who live on the north end of Shoreline go to Linwood more frequently than we go to other places. And so I just want to acknowledge, again, this regional concept should not be this line that someone drew in 1860 should not necessarily be the end-all be-all of how we think about our neighbors. And the community center, I couldn't agree with you more. We don't need 15 community centers. We need to have a few that we can use. And I really appreciate the leadership that former Representative Kagi and Councilmember Woodward have brought to this whole picture. And I would like to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Robertson.
I don't have a lot to add. I know that coming into the meeting tonight, I was feeling much more stingy than it sounds like my council colleagues were. And now I'm just kind of taking it all in and trying to understand. Of course, I understand and appreciate the circle around Shoreline reference. And while there are some specialized services, there is a lot of overlap. And considering the conversation we just had and, you know, the need for dollars, I would want to see this presented as one of the options that we consider during the mid-buy and weigh it against other things that may emerge that I'm not aware of yet. Social services, community services, I am a huge advocate for. I was really curious, and I think you answered it, Councilmember Scully, just how the ask came to us. Like, who was it that said, hey, can Shoreline give us some money? And I'm just interested to know the origins of that. Or did you just kind of cook it up one night or one day in the shower? You don't need to answer that part. Because then I started thinking, again, with my stingy hat on, we've got a major project that we're going to be talking about, you know, hopefully, and asking our voters to support a pool. And that's not just going to be a local facility. It's not going to be, we're not going to cut off the entry line at the border. But I also don't expect that we're going to see any dollars incoming from neighboring communities. So love the concept, and I'm just kind of still sitting with the idea of our role and how big our role should be to support it.
Can I answer that question with no reference to the shower? I attended a tour, and I can't remember who invited me on it, but I took the tour, and I happened to take a tour with representatives from Edwards, Linwood, and Mount Lake Terrace, and they announced the funding, and they all got a round of applause, and I jokingly at the end of that told the whole group, oh, I know why I'm here. And I then spoke with Representative Kagi about, you know, whether what their financial needs were, and I discovered there's a $900,000 shortfall. And I was convinced beforehand, and certainly on the tour, what we've been discussing, that it's not 100% a Shoreline project, but that we will get some benefit from it, and that that was the genesis. And I think the deputy mayor had a similar experience.
I'll put in my two cents here. It is a fantastic facility. It is going to serve a lot of people, and it serves, it will serve when it's up and operating a lot of needs that are not currently met. I mean, and as Councilmember Scully put it very nicely, I mean, when we, for our residents, the border is just, no one knows what the border is. I mean, I was back when I first wasn't really aware of what borders, where the border was, I was like, is Costco in Snohomish County? for selfish reasons. And now it's like, I'm very, like, no, that's ours. Yeah. But I think we need to think about this in terms of other asks and other desires from both from the city manager and from us on the council, in terms of what our priorities and what our needs are. And think about this in context. And it's not, for me, it's not a no, it's a let's see where this fits and how this aligns with sort of the other projects we have. We just adopted today our ADA plan, where we are millions of dollars short. And $100,000 could go a long way in providing access to shoreline residents at some of our parks. We have talked about, okay, we have lots of people who are on the verge of being evicted from their homes, and utility assistance or rent assistance provides an immediate need for someone, a shoreline resident who needs that money now. And these are all hard decisions that we have and complex decisions that we have to think about. We all have a responsibility to think about as a council. And I know, I think it's been Councilmember Scully who sort of is always frequently at budget time, don't bring things, it's hard for me to sort of think of things during the budget right now because I don't really know how it fits with all these other pieces. And I appreciate Councilmember Scully and Deputy Mayor Moore for bringing it today so we can have at least a full discussion of the merits of this rather than sort of the 15-minute discussion we might have when someone brings a budget amendment, which may still be. But at least we have a full discussion and sort of understanding of what this is. So again, I think for me, I want to, like Councilmember Robertson, I want to see this as part of our discussion of options for what to do with any excess money and savings that we have had over the past with a couple budgets. But I also want to be able to weigh that and the amount with other competing priorities. So I guess that's, but I mean, but to the organizers and to anyone who's been sort of following this project, I'm sure that we can find out and share where people can make donations to in their individual capacity to help solve this gap, because I think I think I can say, I'm looking around and see nods around the table, that as a city, if there was a resolution right now saying encouraging people to support this project, I think that would pass unanimously without even any question. So this is going to be good for, this project is good for our community and in our broader community as well. So my 2 cents.
Mayor, understanding that this will be analyzed against the full mid-buy budget request, this is currently not in the budget. So for us to put it in the budget, for you to analyze it, we need a dollar amount.
I think that could come at any point up through adoption of the mid-buy budget. I think Councilmember Scully has suggested a number. I think he preferred the top end of his range. I think that others may prefer a smaller number. But I think that we can, if it's not in the budget right now, I think we're all okay if it's not in the budget that's presented. Is that, and then we can amend the budget through our normal processes, unless I hear differently.
I forget every year on mid-buy. My recollection is that an individual council member can propose a budget amendment. All right, so I'm proposing $100,000, and then we can debate, and that can be reduced or not voted down.
Is everyone's comfortable with that? City manager comfortable with that? Okay, any further discussion? With that, this meeting's adjourned.